The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to another edition of Eye on the Enemy, powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I'm your host, John Stolness. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to get into the NFC divisional round of the playoffs with Cody Benjamin, NFL writer for CBS Sports. He's going to help me break down all four games coming up this weekend, and we are obviously going to talk a lot about the Eagles' search for a new head coach and where things are going to be heading here in the next few weeks and months. So we're going to dive into all that coming up here in just a few minutes on Eye on the Enemy. Just want to remind you to check out all of our great shows here at the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed, and make sure to continue to check us out on bleedinggreennation.com every day to keep you up to date on all of the rumors going on with this football team and all the head coaching candidates that are going to come in and out of Philadelphia here over the next few weeks and months. But before we get to our conversation with Cody Benjamin, some things about what went down here with Doug Peterson, obviously, over the last few days. Kind of one of those things that's shocking and then yet not surprising at the same time. I just still find it hard to believe that 3 years after a Super Bowl, the Eagles actually fired Doug Peterson. They actually did make him the scapegoat for 2020. And Jeff Lurie said during his news conference that Doug Peterson didn't deserve to get fired, but yet he fired him. And I do understand that Doug Peterson's coaching decisions, what he wanted to do as far as his coaching staff next year, and the fact that he wanted to keep Mike Groh last year and keep some of the other guys last year, that he had to be overruled for that. I understand where the Eagles were coming from with some of that, even though I disagree with it, because these are not good decisions that Doug Peterson was coming to the table with, wanting to promote Press Taylor to offensive coordinator, wanting to bring Corey Unlin in as defensive coordinator. I don't see the wisdom in that at all. But that being said, you know my position on Doug Peterson. He should have been allowed to pick his own staff. A Super Bowl winning coach gets to pick his own staff. That's just the way it goes. And the fact that Jeff Lurie and Howie Roseman didn't want to allow that to happen forced him out, for no doubt. And it's disappointing because I do think Doug Peterson's a good head football coach, and I don't know who they're going to get. I don't know who they're going to get to replace Doug Peterson. We're going to get into that with Cody coming up here in just a few minutes. But, you know, none of the explanation for any of this has made any sense in the days since Jeff Lurie held that Zoom news conference and the announcement was made. You know, different things are being leaked by different people to tell different stories, and none of it fits together. Because here's what Jeffrey Lurie said. He said he fired Doug Peterson because Peterson wanted to approach 2021 with a win-at-all-costs mentality, that he's still in win-now mode, that he's still in a mode to get back to the Super Bowl, and Jeff Lurie was essentially saying that's not where the team is right now, that they need to take a step back. They need to reevaluate where they are. They need to focus on getting younger and really now deal with the salary cap hell that they're going to be in. When Howie Roseman had his side-by-side Zoom call with Doug Peterson, it was really Howie Roseman's news conference. Doug didn't say two words because you never get a chance to talk to Howie Roseman. He's like finding a unicorn in the forest. You know, when you see one, you're going to devote all your attention to him. So that was what Howie was really preaching as well, was that they needed to take a step back, that they had talked about getting younger these last two off seasons, but never did it because they really felt like there was a chance to kind of keep that Super Bowl window propped open. But unfortunately, the crowbar that they thought they had been using was instead like a painter's stirring wand. and it snapped this offseason, or pardon me, in during the 2020 season. And now this offseason, they're finally waking up to the fact that, yes, they actually do have to get younger, and they have to stop stashing draft picks every year. They got to stop spending first and second round and third round draft picks on guys that they don't expect to play for 3 years. So what Jeff Lurie is saying is that this team is on a slow rebuild now. Not even us necessarily. There is no real slow rebuild in the NFL unless you're the New York Jets. But you can get good pretty quickly in the NFL if you're smart. But the Eagles are realizing that the 2021 and probably the 2022 seasons are not going to be seasons where they're hunting a Super Bowl. But then Troy Aikman said something in a podcast that came out on Thursday, that he talked to Doug Peterson after Peterson was fired, and that his impression was that Doug wanted to move forward with Jalen Hurts as his quarterback, and that Jeffrey Lurie and the Eagles wanted to move forward with Carson Wentz, and then that was a big part of the reason why Doug Peterson was let go. Well, if the Eagles truly are going to take a step back, as Jeff Lurie said, and look to rebuild, then it makes no sense to fire the coach that wanted to move forward with Jalen Hurts, the younger quarterback, because with Carson Wentz, let's say Carson Wentz is a little bit better this year. Let's say he goes back to his 2018 and 2019 levels. He's going to enter 2021 with a roster that has little talent, certainly much less talent than any of the rosters he's had over the last few years. And unless they trade Jalen Hurts this offseason, Carson Wentz is going to go into 2021 in the same exact scenario as 2020, only with a more established Hurts behind him. We went into this season thinking there really wasn't any way Jalen Hurts was going to get any playing time because no one saw Carson Wentz falling off a cliff. And so the objection to Jalen Hurts was, yes, it muddied up the locker room. And who knows what kind of an effect it actually had on Carson Wentz. It certainly doesn't seem like it had a good effect on Carson Wentz. But nobody saw Carson Wentz's precipitous drop and Jalen Hurts actually starting games here for the Eagles and playing well in the first two games, right? So now you've got Jalen Hurts with four games as a starter underneath his belt. You've got a lot of the fan base that really believes Jalen Hurts is the future at the quarterback position. You're going to bring Carson Wentz back next year in that scenario for a crappy season, you know, with a crappy season in his rearview mirror. And no doubt about it, the ire of the city is on his shoulders now. Right or wrong, people are going to blame Carson Wentz for Doug Peterson getting fired. And he's going to have a brand new head coach that for sure I would think is going to be quicker on the trigger with Carson Wentz, right? Keeping Carson Wentz as this team's quarterback makes absolutely zero sense at this point. And as Dan Orlovsky noted, I think on 97.5 The Fanatic, you cannot saddle a new head coach with Carson Wentz. What really bright-minded head coach, unless they are in love with Carson Wentz, and really is any head coach in the NFL, maybe aside from Frank Reich, in love with Carson Wentz? Are you going to saddle a new head coach? Is a new head coach that's worth their salt going to want to come here and be told, drop an old 1970s Chevelle in the front lawn and say, you got to fix this? I don't know that Carson Wentz is that broken down. I don't know where Carson Wentz is. No one knows if he can be fixed. No one knows if he can be revived. But are you going to make that the first job of the new head coach that comes in? I don't see it. So this is why none of this makes sense. If Jeff Lurie truly wants to take a step back these next couple of years and rebuild, you're going to waste 2 years of really Carson Wentz's prime. He's going to be 28 and 29 years old. Now, maybe Carson Wentz plays into his 30s, but you've got 2 years where you're paying him a ton of money. You are dumping a ton of money into the quarterback position. You generally speaking only do that when you have a team that's going to compete for the postseason. Now, the Eagles may have no choice. They may not be able to find a suitor. They may not be able to trade Carson Wentz, and they may have to bite the bullet. But the rationale for Doug Peterson's firing just doesn't match up. These two things do not match. And so I'm not really sure exactly where Doug Peterson is, where Jeff Lurie is, where Howie Roseman is on any of this stuff. None of it makes any sense. So and the other thing I've that just really sticks in my crawl about all this with Doug Peterson's firing is, what does this say about Carson Wentz? I know we had Rob Motti on the show last week, and he said that Carson takes ownership of his flaws and that he's coachable, that he's taken responsibility for how he played this year. I haven't seen it. And we haven't seen Carson Wentz refute anything that his people put out there, right? I mean, I can't imagine Doug Peterson's a hard guy to work with. What's the friction here? What is it about Doug Peterson, who by all accounts is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, is one of the nicest head coaches, one of the more amenable, go-with-the-flow head coaches in the NFL? How do you not have, like, seriously, there must be something. Like, what is it that Carson Wentz just cannot play for Doug Peterson? I mean, to me, this speaks volumes about Carson Wentz. You know, when you take into account the Philly Voice piece from a couple of years ago, which I thought at the time was unfair towards Wentz, but you look at that now and how his camp has leaked out over the last couple of weeks that he wants to be traded unless Doug Peterson's gone, and how Carson has so far refused to speak to the media following a season in which he truly played awful, has not spoken to the media to be accountable for his season and for what's been going on with all of the rumors out there. He's letting those rumors sit out there. He's letting that do his talking for him. I'm starting to believe that the problem with this team, or one of the big problems with this team, certainly more of a problem than Doug Peterson, is Carson Wentz. And again, I have to say this over and over again because I was chief Carson Wentz defender number one these last few years. But until somebody can present to me a real reason why Carson Wentz would have a problem with Doug Peterson, I'm going to look side-eyed at Carson Wentz with this whole situation because I just don't understand it. And so you've moved Doug Peterson out of the head coaching job where he won the Super Bowl 3 years ago, the first time a Super Bowl-winning head coach has been fired within 3 seasons after winning a Super Bowl since 1973. There's a reason head coaches don't get fired 3 years after a Super Bowl. It's usually because they're pretty good. And Doug Peterson didn't win that Super Bowl on accident. They didn't win that Super Bowl in spite of him. He didn't win that Super Bowl with somebody else's players and somebody else's scheme like John Gruden did with Tony Dungy's players with the Buccaneers, right? Back in 2002. That's not the situation we're looking at here. Doug Peterson was instrumental in that Super Bowl. What he did getting two teams to the playoffs in 2018 and 2019, two of the most injury-riddled playoff teams in NFL history, says something. And it says something about the way these players always played hard for Doug Peterson. We'll see who the Eagles can get to replace him, but man, the grass is not always greener on the other side, gang. And I'm not happy about this at all, because there was an argument to be made for blowing it all up, getting rid of Peterson and Howie Roseman. But with Howie Roseman staying where he is, I don't like it. And I know that maybe Jeff Lurie felt he had no choice with the coaching ideas that Doug Peterson put in front of him. But I still believe Doug should have been allowed to sink or swim here in 2021. But I guess one of the other ways you can look at it is if Jeff Lurie is looking at 2021 as a lost season and they weren't going to really put forth an effort to win football games in 2021, that Doug Peterson probably was going to be fired next year anyway. So why wait? And it sure sounds like this is the best thing for Doug Peterson. He was sick and tired of people telling him what to do. And as a Super Bowl winning head coach, he had less power than any Super Bowl winning head coach in NFL history. He should have been given more autonomy. He should have been given more freedom. You talk about, and I mentioned this on the 94 WIP morning show this week, I don't think the Eagles ever truly embraced Doug Peterson. They never truly embraced him. He was the last dog at the bowl in 2016. He was the guy they didn't want. They wanted all those other head coaches. They wanted Adam Gase. They wanted Ben McAdoo. They wanted all the other guys that failed. They lucked into Doug Peterson. But I don't think they ever got that taste out of their mouths, that they never really loved him. They never really embraced him as their head coach. It's clear, and maybe that has something to do with the taste that Chip Kelly left in their mouths, and they never wanted to give a head coach any kind of power again. But they micromanaged Doug Peterson to the point where he really should have quit last year. When he came out and said that he was keeping Mike Groh and Carson Walsh, as much as I wanted Groh and Walsh fired, when Jeff Lurie overruled that and he had to come out a day later to say and backpedal and look foolish, man, I don't know if I could have kept that job. I don't know if I could have stayed on. I mean, Doug Peterson, and that's what I mean, Doug Peterson, how are you not able to get along with Doug Peterson that he was able to swallow his pride like that and submit himself to the whims and the wishes of his bosses when he could have quit and gotten another job someplace else. Right? But he submitted himself because he was committed to staying in Philadelphia. And of all the head coaches I've ever seen, probably has less ego than any head coach in NFL history. So this is just, these guys, Jeff Lurie and Howie Roseman, never appreciated Doug Peterson. They never embraced Doug Peterson, and that has manifested itself in how little authority they've given him over these last couple of years, how they've always babysat him, how they've always had to make sure that they were calling the shots, and Doug Peterson never really got a chance to make this team his own. I'm excited to see where he ends up. He's not going to go to the New York Jets because they've hired San Francisco's defensive coordinator as their new head coach here on Thursday night. Salah, he's not going to be coming to Philadelphia. But what you've got with Doug Peterson leaving is it's going to be what's best for him. And I don't know that it's going to be what's best for the Eagles, because you still have a dysfunctional organization with an owner who's meddling, with a general manager who's meddling, and you're going to bring in a head coach that I'm not sure they're going to get the guy that they want. You might be looking at another situation like in 2016, where they had to take one of the last choices that they want to make. But we're going to talk to Cody Benjamin about that coming up here in the next couple of minutes from CBS Sports. So he's going to tell us all about the Eagles' head coaching search, and we'll also dive into the NFL playoffs this weekend. Four divisional round playoff games coming your way, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. We're going to talk about all that coming up next with Cody right here on Eye on the Enemy.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And joining me to talk a little bit about the Eagles head coaching search, the firing of Doug Peterson, and to preview this weekend's NFL divisional round in the playoffs is Cody Benjamin, good friend of the podcast. He's an NFL reporter for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Cody J. Benjamin. Cody, thanks for coming back on Eye on the Enemy, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you. I'm excited to talk some football.
Absolutely. And let's jump right into the Eagles coaching search here, because more names get added to this list every day. To say that the Eagles have cast a wide net would be understating it a little bit. You tweeted out, and I think it was either yesterday or today, but as we're recording this on the 14th, this was on the 13th, you tweeted out a whole list of names. We've got Carolina offensive coordinator Joe Brady, Tennessee offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, San Francisco defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, Tampa Bay defensive coordinator Todd Bowles, New England linebackers coach Jerod Mayo, Kansas City quarterbacks coach Mike Kafka, Philadelphia assistant head coach Deuce Staley, Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley, Ohio State head coach Ryan Day, Cincinnati head coach Luke Fickell, and more are coming each and every day. And I know among Eagles fans, you know, we see this as a pretty dysfunctional team right now. We see this as an organization that doesn't seem to know exactly what they're doing. And we're skeptical as to whether or not a really high profile coach is going to want to come here. Given the list of names here, where are you at on this Eagles coaching search, as they really are just getting started right now?
Yeah, and we saw just Kellen Moore added today.
Oh, right.
And obviously, you know, they're going to continue to cast the net. And I think just in general, I think there's a little merit to the idea that, you know, when you compare openings, the Eagles aren't, bursting with attraction just because of the situation. I mean, Doug Peterson clearly, if the reports are to be believed, is kind of worn down from this run with the Eagles. But I honestly don't put too much stock into this idea that they're undesirable, because at the end of the day, there's 32 jobs. There's 32 head coaching jobs in the NFL. We see guys interview with teams like the Jets and the Jaguars every coaching cycle. Yes, they sometimes have high picks, so they sometimes have a lot of cap space, but at the end of the day, it's an NFL head coaching job. You can't tell me, you know, if you're Joe Brady and you're getting interest from all these teams, I mean, you're just not going to turn down the opportunity. And so, and eventually some of those spots are going to get filled. For me, I mean, I guess I start for the Eagles with looking at the offensive side of the ball. I know it's a big talking point with Jeffrey Lurie, with you know, really any Eagles fan that's been under or watching Jeffrey Lurie hires run the team. I think really it comes down to, are you going for, you know, you're going to have to sacrifice somewhere, because with somebody like a Joe Brady, even a Kellen Moore, you're really banking on them being kind of an offensive mastermind, an up-and-coming mastermind, as opposed to this person who's been around the league for years and respected. And, you know, Doug Peterson, even though he didn't have head coaching experience, you know, Jeffrey Lurie himself talked about that emotional intelligence. He talked about, you know, Doug Peterson's a former quarterback in this league. He had time under Andy Reid. And so I think it's just a matter of, where are they going to sacrifice? Because if they go with, you know, Robert Saleh from the 49ers, you're sacrificing, you might bring in a nice offensive coordinator with him, but he may leave in a year for another head coaching job. And so what do they want? We're going to find out.
Yeah. And because I think offensive coaches tend to get head coaching jobs more frequently than a defensive coach, if you bring in a defensive coordinator, he's likely to stick around for a longer period of time than a really bright offensive coach, like you're saying. So to me, I just don't have any interest in a defensive minded head coach, but I do think there are some offensive coaches out there who do have those leadership qualities. And I think one of the guys that I think a lot of people in Philadelphia would really like to see get a legitimate chance this time around, and he always seems to be getting passed over in Philadelphia, is Deuce Staley. I don't know what else. And I think Deuce Staley is a big unknown because he's been under people his entire time in Philadelphia. So we don't really know what a Deuce Staley offense would look like. Would it be a run heavy offense, kind of in the mold of a Kyle Shanahan, John Harbaugh type thing, utilizing Jalen Hurts? Or would he be somebody who likes what Doug Peterson tried to do with Carson Wentz? Or would he want to open it up and do something different? And we just don't know that. What I think we have heard about Deuce Staley, and this is what I want to ask you about, is his ability to lead a team and how important that is when you're looking at a head coaching candidate who's more than just about looking at film. You need someone who has that emotional intelligence that Doug Peterson had.
Absolutely. And I think there's several interesting dynamics with Deuce Staley. Firstly, that he's been passed over already several times, not even just for head coach, but for offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, he's gotten those titles added on, but you know, if they were to pass over him here, you know, if ever there were a time for Deuce Staley to be not handed the job, everyone's got to earn it. But if ever there were a time, it'd be now, right?
Right. Or he should go.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, if they pass over him now, I'm not sure, you know, what is his role really in this staff? But the other thing, yeah, I think that's the huge question. I don't think there's any disagreement about the fact that Deuce Staley is a leader of men, is a guy that can command respect in the locker room. But I would offer that, you know, throw away, I guess, that week 17 thing, however you look at it, with Doug Peterson. I would argue that Doug Peterson already did that. I mean, he guys never quit on him,
right?
Through those, you know, all those seasons. I think the one thing that Doug Peterson always did well was lead, was be a guy that the players trusted in, they looked to. What I think that the key is here is, you know, is Jeffrey Lurie interested more in kind of replicating that players first mentality of the coach with a guy like Deuce Staley? Or is he concerned with, I need to fix my quarterback, I need to fix my offense? And maybe Deuce can do both of those things, but we really only know right now, like you said, that he can do one of those things. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has a great scheme that's friendly to a quarterback, but that also relies on, you know, who are the staffers he's putting into place as well. And so I think Deuce Staley is a very qualified candidate. It's just a matter of, is he the right guy for the Eagles job right now?
Which of the candidates that we know are out there right now that you think are realistic for the Eagles to get would be ones that would excite Eagles fans? Like what would be a really good fit? Is there one in particular that you look at, one or two or, you know, a handful that you think would be particularly good fits in Philadelphia that you think would actually come here?
Well, I'll start with the ones that I don't think would be particularly exciting.
Good.
Yeah. I think that like someone like Todd Bowles, I think, you know, he was in Philadelphia before. He's got a good defense with the Buccaneers. But I mean, it sounds a little like a retread. It is a retread because, you know, he had the Jets tenure. I just don't know that that's going to be, you know, people are going to be like, wow, we got Todd Bowles
right.
After Doug Peterson. Mike Kafka is not quite as much, but just because you're pulling from the same tree.
Yeah.
That seems a little odd, to be honest. And then as far as ones that are exciting, I mean, I know Lincoln Riley is probably a far-fetched one. That might be exciting for the fact that you're just doing a total kind of rebuild. But I look at guys, at least for me, like a Joe Brady, like a Kellen Moore. I mean, those are two. I think the idea of a Jerod Mayo is really intriguing if only he were on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
I just think that there's something to this idea that these really young guys, not that you're trying to replicate the whole Sean McVay thing, but guys that are just going to bring a freshness to that locker room, but are also well-versed in putting together offensive game plans. I mean, that's really what this is all about here. And I think that Joe Brady, you know, very limited in experience, but he's been at the college level. He worked under Sean Payton in New Orleans. He's going to be if you think that Joe Brady's going to be a head coach in a year or two, you might not have the chance again. I mean, you might as well do it if you really believe in it. And same goes for a guy like Kellen Moore, and that you're not playing the game like, oh, we want to hurt Dallas too. Mm-hmm. That's not why you're hiring. But if you trust he can put a game plan together, still relate to coaches and bring a fresh mindset, I look at those guys.
One last thing on the Eagles coaching search here, and then we'll move on. How does Carson Wentz fit into all this? I mean, we heard Troy Aikman in a podcast this week basically say he talked to Doug Peterson after Peterson was fired, and Peterson seemed to indicate to him that he wanted to move on with Jalen Hurts, while the organization seemed to want to keep Carson Wentz and try to fix Carson Wentz, which doesn't line up with with Jeff Lurie's comments in the Zoom call that he thinks it's time for the Eagles to kind of start over and take a step back with Carson Wentz in his prime coming off a down year. None of that makes a whole lot, doesn't line up for me. So I'm thinking, trying to figure out, how does a new coach, like, you know, one of the guys you were just talking about, would they want to have to take on Carson Wentz and try to fix that problem as like their first thing? I mean, it's like bringing somebody in and dropping an old Chevelle in their front yard on cement blocks and saying, okay, you know, giving you the keys to the office here, fix this first, you know, make this look like it did when, you know. And they may not. I wonder if that's a deal breaker for some coaches. And I wonder whether or not Jalen Hurts is seen around the league as someone to build around. And the Eagles have this number six pick in the draft, so there's a lot of moving pieces with the quarterback. How does the quarterback situation fit into the coaching search?
Yeah. I wish I had the answers for you, because I'm the same. I went into the Jeffrey Lurie conference thinking here's this chance to really be like, you know, Doug is gone. Not to say that it was one or the other, but his chance to kind of reaffirm that Carson Wentz, and he was even less convincing in his argument for Carson Wentz than Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson were. The week before. And so that threw me for a little bit of a loop, because it seems to me that it's still kind of, and of course it's going to be this way until they hire a coach. I mean, from the Carson Wentz camp, it's still, we're holding off. And like you said, I mean, it really depends. I'd be curious. I don't think there's necessarily a consensus around the league what Carson Wentz is right now, because we have to remind ourselves. I mean, we've been having the argument or the debate all season long when Carson Wentz is struggling. How much stock do you put into the one bad season, and how much stock do you put into the four mostly good, occasionally great seasons? And if you just look at the last stretch of the season, recency bias is a real thing in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so coaches could definitely look at Jalen Hurts and be like, we'd rather roll the dice with him and a draft pick. But I would hesitate to give up entirely on Carson Wentz. It's just a matter of, can you align that coach and quarterback combo? It's going to be interesting, because I don't know that we know exactly what the market is for Carson Wentz around the league right now. But it sure seems like, you know, if you just read into what Jeffrey Lurie has said, what Howie Roseman has said, everyone's kind of in a holding pattern right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to unspool all this. I just don't. I don't know how. I mean, I get the idea of moving on from Carson Wentz and taking the cap hit in 2021 and freeing it up for yourself thereafter. That seems to me, if you want to do what Jeffrey Lurie is talking about and take a step back and rebuild, that makes more sense to me than continuing to stay on the hook and pay a franchise quarterback money during a rebuild. The whole reason for doing a rebuild is try and clear the decks and build around a young cheap quarterback. And those two things just don't line up to me. And if you were going to keep Carson Wentz, then you keep Doug Peterson, but doesn't sound like Doug Peterson wanted Carson Wentz. So it's like, I don't know.
It's crazy because I don't know that anyone really knows fully what went on behind the scenes because I don't know. I mean, can you just chalk this up to and Carson Wentz, you know, on and off the field for the majority of his career. I mean, the guy he's been a class act. Yeah. And so this has been almost, I don't want to suggest he's doing something differently, but it's been out of character.
Yeah.
To suggest that he would all of a sudden be like, if Doug's back, I'm out. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, was it as simple as the ego was hurt by this, the way the events unfolded? You know, winning back the team after Nick Foles, the drafting of Jalen Hurts, and the way that quarterback change was made. Was it the way it was handled? I mean, we don't know how this was all communicated, but either way, it seems pretty apparent. I mean, especially with Carson Wentz's silence these last few weeks that, you know, he hasn't put out a statement saying we loved working with Doug, you know. I'm just curious, do you see any scenario where they're both Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz on the roster in 2021?
You know what? Because the Eagles are as dysfunctional as they are right now. Yes. There's no way they should be there. And I think Carson Wentz has played himself and talked himself, or in this case, really not talked himself out of Philadelphia. I can't because you're going to be bad the next couple of years. He's not going to be able to redeem himself with wins and losses on the field. It's going to be perceived that he forced out Doug Peterson at this point. So I just can't see a way that Carson Wentz can be the quarterback this year other than the financial aspect of it. I mean, but I just feel like there's got to be a way to trade him. So yes, it's a bloodbath in 2021 and then you just move on, you know, you sink that cost and you move on because I don't see any way that he can redeem himself in Philadelphia at this point. And that is the biggest question I have had throughout this whole thing. Is you've got Doug Peterson, who is perceived as a really good, solid person, right? You've got Carson Wentz, who is a perceived, like you said, as a good, solid person. On the surface, from the outside, it looks like Doug Peterson has had Carson's back this whole time. He's always tried to encourage Carson. I think Carson continued starting longer than he should have this year. Doug probably should have pulled the trigger 2 weeks earlier. So I can't see from the outside what problem Carson Wentz would have with Doug Peterson that makes any sense at all, unless there are things going on behind the scenes, or maybe Doug was pushing to remove Carson earlier in the season and Jeffrey Lurie was telling him no, but we just don't know any of that stuff. And we probably never will.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, like you said, it just shows the dysfunction that you've gotten to this point. And if they do end up keeping Carson Wentz purely because of finances, I think you're continuing to make the mess worse, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's no reason you trot out a guy for many reasons, for his sake, for the team's sake, for, you know, whatever. It almost seems as if unless they, there's like one of two options here. It seems like either Jeffrey Lurie, purely because of financial reasons, if that's kind of what Troy Aikman was suggesting, that, that he was in on Carson because the paychecks are already going out. That's one way, which is pretty dysfunctional, not helping anyone. The other way that Carson stays is maybe in these head coaching interviews, someone really just professes a love for Carson Wentz, a real belief that they can fix him. And you look at, you know, his body of work and you say, we might not be great this year. Maybe we can contend the following year. He's still just turned 28. Mm-hmm. We believe he can play till 35, 36, whatever. But that's going to take some convincing. I mean, your coach has to be convinced of that because then you're saying we're going through this rebuild where we have a chance to maybe draft a quarterback and we're going to choose to kind of fall back on what Carson Wentz has proven before.
Yeah. And we've seen really good quarterbacks with a couple of years in their prime, their teams take a step back and then they reemerge. But those quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers was good the whole time, even during the downtime, and Carson Wentz.
And they also didn't have the dysfunction of the rest of the team, you know, the coach departing at this stage of the career, the rumors about, you know, it's such a messy situation.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the NFL playoffs here this weekend, and we'll just kind of go rapid fire on these four games to finish things up, because these are some really good matchups. Sometimes in the divisional round, you get some mismatches, and, you know, hey, that might be the way it shakes out this time around. Some of the spreads are a little large, but I think these are really good games we have, because look at the first game on Saturday. You got the Rams at the Packers. Green Bay is favored by 6.5, but that Rams defense is really something else. I mean, Aaron Donald is a monster, and it takes all it would take is a big day from Aaron Donald to make life miserable for Aaron Rodgers. We've seen Aaron Rodgers play well in big games, but we've also seen him not play well in some big games. And so, you know, the Rams are on the road. The Packers have that first round bye. They're the only NFC team with that first round bye. So I think that's going to be a huge advantage for them this weekend. Where do you see this thing shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, the Rams are kind of a team that I've kind of, you know, written them off for a few weeks now, and they're here, and they're within a game of the NFC Championship. And so I'm not a big believer in Jared Goff at this point, but their defense, like you said, is capable of keeping it close. I mean, the Jalen Ramsey, Devontae Adams matchup, that's another one that should be, you know, primetime entertainment. And so, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is not immune to that playoff slip up, but I just look at what the Packers have been doing on offense. I think they're, you know, if it comes down to it, it's a close game. The Rams keep it close. I still would trust Aaron Rodgers over Jared Goff to kind of deliver the victory there.
All right, so Packers move on in that game for you. The second game on Saturday is the Ravens and the Bills. And I got to tell you, I'm leaning towards the Ravens on this one. I know the Bills are the talk of the NFC, but they kind of struggled a little bit with Indianapolis last week. And the Ravens look like right now the way they did last year when they were taking the AFC by storm. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this is probably, you know, you could argue Saints Bucks is the toss up too, but I think this is the most, I guess, up in the air for me. I mean, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, one of the guys really great, electric with his legs, the other one with his arm. It's tough. We had to do bold predictions this week, and I chose the Ravens to win. And so, I just think, you know, Buffalo has been vulnerable against the run this year at times. And so if Lamar Jackson can get on the move, especially if this is a snowy game, they're not going to be throwing it through the air that much. I like the Ravens, ground attack in this one, but boy, is it going to be a fun one.
Yeah, it really should be a high-scoring game, I would think. And you got the Browns at the Chiefs here in the second AFC divisional game. The Chiefs, this is a big line. The Chiefs favored by 10. And I don't know how you look at the Browns-Steelers game from last week. Obviously, it was a blowout on the Browns side, but really the Steelers just gave that game away in the first quarter. And after that, it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, they played them pretty tight after that, but you dig yourself a 4-touchdown hole, it's hard to dig out of that. And Andy Reid coming off a bye in the playoffs, especially, it's really hard to get one past him in those types of situations. Yeah. Is there any chance that the Browns are able to pull this off?
I don't know. I feel bad for Kevin Stefanski. You know, he leads the Browns to this great record, has to sit out the first playoff game, and then he comes back to play the Chiefs and Arrowhead. Yeah, I think when you look at the Steelers game, so many of those Browns scores, you don't want to discredit what their defense did, but so many of those Browns touchdowns to run up that early lead came off of turnovers. And so once the Steelers just held onto the ball, it was a different story. And so Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, I mean, run down the list, it's going to be hard for them to stop it. The only way maybe they hope is slightly lower scoring. Mm-hmm. You're running the ball a lot with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines, but it's just too, I mean, it's too tough to go with the Browns there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too set up for the Chiefs. It really is. And final game, the NFC divisional game on Sunday evening or late Sunday afternoon, the Bucs and the Saints. Again, I think this is a really, really close one. And you've got a great quarterback matchup here. Tom Brady versus Drew Brees, two Hall of Famers going at it for a trip to the NFC Championship game. What do you think about this one?
I mean, everything says the Saints should be able to win because they've won 5 straight against the Bucs. Tom Brady's not looked good against the Saints. New Orleans has a great defense, even better than the Bucs, I'd say. But I'm going with Tom Brady. I mean, I know that whether you love him or you hate him, I mean, I think he has been throwing the ball better lately. Mm-hmm. The chemistry with guys like Antonio Brown has been there. You know, I think the Saints are going to give him clearly a run for their money, but I like the Buccaneers to finally, you know, third time's the charm here with them.
Yeah. As an Eagles fan who was living through the Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb years when they were beating the Buccaneers in the playoffs every year and in the regular season. And then you get to that NFC Championship game in 2002 at Veterans Stadium, final game ever. I was there. I knew we were going to win that game. I mean, I just knew it in my bones, and which obviously led to one of the worst games in franchise history. So, yeah, it's certainly... New Orleans Saints fans, I'm just trying to give you a little bit of warning. Don't think just because you've beaten the Bucs 5-6 times in a row that it's necessarily going to happen in the playoffs.
And we've seen lately the Saints have – they've been great in the regular season, but they have, you know, had some upset losses in the playoffs these last few years. So it's not out of the question.
Absolutely. Well, folks, make sure you're reading Cody Benjamin's work for CBS Sports by following him on the Twitter machine at Cody J. Benjamin. Cody, thanks for coming back on Eye on the Enemy, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, John. I appreciate it.
Well, to wrap things up, let me give you my picks for this weekend. You heard Cody's picks. I'll give you mine. And last week, I went 4-2 in the wild card round. And in the overall SB Nation straight-up win-loss records, I've moved to within one win of the community. Obviously, I have the best record among all the BGN writers and experts for the second year in a row. And I'm one game away. I'm one win off from matching the community record. So I'm still looking to take over you guys, but you guys have had an awesome year. But here are my picks for this weekend, so take them for the grain of salt with which you normally would. The first game on Saturday is the Rams at the Packers, and of course Green Bay favored by 6.5 points. Hard to say how big an impact being the only team with a first-round bye is going to be for the Packers and the Chiefs this weekend. I came away watching the Rams defense really impressed in the wild card weekend. They are awesome. Aaron Donald is awesome. They absolutely could pull off an upset in Green Bay. I do think this game will be pretty close, but I do like the Packers to cover just barely. I think they win by a touchdown. I've got Green Bay beating the Rams 30-23. In the second game, the Ravens and the Bills. The Bills have had a storybook season. I know a lot of people have compared them to the 2017 Eagles. That certainly could be the case. I would love to see them win it all. They are the team that I'm rooting for the most here in the postseason. When you think about the four straight Super Bowl losses for the Bills in the 90s and the fan base there that has suffered for so many years, that fan base deserves a championship more than any other fan base, maybe even in all of professional sports after everything they've been through. That being said, Baltimore, who struggled all year to get their offense going, now finally has that offense humming like it was last year. And you've got two high-scoring teams. I think the Bills, I mean, we're hearing that there could be some bad weather on Saturday, but even so, both these teams can run the ball. You've got Josh Allen, who is an MVP contender. He's not going to win the MVP. That probably is going to go to Aaron Rodgers. But you've got a guy who's going to probably finish third in the MVP vote in Josh Allen, who's playing lights out. I just wasn't wowed by how they played against the Colts last week. I thought they struggled with the Colts maybe a little bit more than they should have. And the Ravens really are just absolutely rolling right now. So I have the Ravens beating the Bills here in the late game on Saturday night, 41-35. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to go well over the over number here. Ravens 41, Bills 35. All right, on Sunday, Browns at Chiefs. The Chiefs favored by 10 in this game. You know, once the Steelers stopped throwing the ball away, they actually outplayed the Browns over the last three quarters last week. The running game for Cleveland is outstanding, and that's really the only way they're going to beat the Chiefs is by having, as you heard Corey talk about, Chubb and Hunt basically keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. But Andy Reid has historically, again, been unbeatable coming off a bye, especially in the playoffs. And via Corey's colleague Jeff Kerr at CBS, if the Chiefs win on Sunday, they will become the first AFC team to ever host three straight conference championship games. The Eagles are the only NFC team to do that, those three straight conference championship games when Andy Reid was there. So again, both of those teams would have been coached by Andy Reid. And I think the Andy Reid-led Chiefs will pull it off. I think it'll be a fairly easy win for Kansas City, 27-14. Finally, the Bucs at the Saints. The Saints are favored by 3, but like the Ravens, the Bucs, I think, are the hotter team right now. New Orleans has home field advantage, but the crowd won't be a factor, so that takes away a big advantage for the Saints. Brady versus Breeze is awesome. It's going to be a great matchup. And right now, I think Brady is playing a little bit better. I think he has some more weapons at his disposal. I think the Bucs will go into New Orleans and pull off the upset here and take on the Packers in Green Bay next week for the NFC Championship game. Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau Field. That will be fun. I think the Bucs beat New Orleans this weekend 24-19. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Eye on the Enemy. And hey, listen up. On Friday, I've got a brand new BGN Memories coming out, and we're going to be looking back at the 1980 NFC divisional game between the Eagles and the Vikings. We're going to have lots of highlights in there, and we're going to chronicle that 1980 Eagles team as it's going through. Like we've been talking about the 40th anniversary of that 1980 Eagles Super Bowl run. We're going to take a deep dive into the divisional round game between the Eagles and the Vikings from back in 1980. So make sure to check that out. That's going to be on a brand new BGN Memories, which will also be coming out on Friday afternoon, early Friday evening. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Eye on the Enemy.
BGN.